Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I got served up a bowl of dog soup when I was in this temple in North Korea, which is quite an odd experience.
As it is going to be impossible to discuss every travel anecdote that you have, I'm going to go through some questions to find out how you rank some of the places that you've been to.
I went downstairs to leave the hotel and I could just hear gunshots outside, blowing up the prison wall. All the prisoners have escaped and the police are chasing them. And I'm stuck in my hotel and we were on lockdown then, it was like 3 years ago or whatever. And there's just people running, the police are just running around shooting, like trying to shoot criminals on the streets.
Coming up next, you're doing this row across the Atlantic.
2 hours rowing, 2 hours resting, 24 hours a day for 7 or 8 weeks. So you don't ever really properly sleep. When I finished my journey to every country for about 9 months, I didn't really realize it until the following year. I got fat, I was drinking loads, like 5-6 nights a week. My business went to shit. I wasn't doing any of my accounts. And then I look back at it retrospectively and I'm like, whoa, I was hesitant to use the word, but I was probably depressed, you know?
Yes, people, welcome to the Football and Feelings podcast. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Liam, as always. I hope you're keeping well and finding some joy in every day throughout these very tough times for us all. If you've enjoyed any of these podcasts, or if you enjoyed this one, feel free to give it a 5-star rating on iTunes or subscribe to the YouTube channel. It will help me grow the show more and more for every episode. But let's crack on with this episode. I want to introduce you to our next guest. It's a man who has visited every country in the world. He's completed various monstrous challenges on the way, such as 6 marathons in 6 days across the Sahara, cycling the complete length of Thailand in just 13 days. It's globetrotter and Liverpool fan, Johnny Ward. How are you, sir?
Hey, mate. Very good. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure, mate. It's a pleasure. I want to start with a bit of football chat. As you're a Liverpool fan, like I said before we started recording, I might have caught you at a bad time. As we are recording this, it's the morning after Liverpool lost to Burnley 1-0. But how are you feeling amidst that result and some of like your injury issues that you've had recently?
Obviously, I live in Thailand. Normally, I flew back to the UK where I am now mid-December for some health and safety stuff for a challenge I'm about to do. Maybe we'll talk about it later. Yeah. Anyway, so since I've been back in the UK, it's just been a bit of a disaster being a Liverpool fan. I've been watching the football with my brother-in-law before I got bubbled out with the new lockdown. So I'm in an Airbnb now, but he knows I'm a massive fan. And his son, my nephew, now is a Liverpool fan because I send him loads of Liverpool gear with his name all over it, trying to convert him young. And I've got him now. He's 6. So that's good. Anyway, so we've been watching it together and he just is thinking like, what's been going on? You hear all this glorious stuff about Liverpool over the years and now we're crap. I think it's the injuries. Obviously, Van Dijk made us, we're playing deeper now. If you see the average position, we're playing 10, 15 metres deeper now. So that means that our counter press and midfield's deeper, winning the ball back deeper. So that's obviously hurting us. But it's also, I mean, I hate to say, it's a bit of, after having such good fortune for 2 years, yes, we've been playing badly, but our XG is high, our chances are high, not so much high quality chances, but all added up, they should have led to goals over the last 4 games. So yes, it's a slump, but it's also been an unlucky series of slumps back to back. So I'm worried, but it's not a crisis.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that Klopp has to take some of the responsibility in that with Jota getting injured?
Yeah,
he played a good team in the Champions League game that didn't really matter at that point, and against Aston Villa youth as well.
Yeah, I mean, both those decisions were questionable, but you talk about having credit in the bank. Jurgen Klopp will have a statue outside Anfield. So yeah, should he have played Jota? But hindsight's 20/20. If Jota scored a hat-trick and he hadn't played against Wolves the week before, same as Salah had just come back, that's why he played against Michelin. And equally then, you can get injured at any time, can't you? I'm trying to defend him because he's given me so much joy over the last 2.5 years. I think if it had been Hodgson or someone back in the day doing it, you'd be ready to tie him up. But with Klopp, I just got so much trust in what he's done that any small mistakes are forgiven considering the genius that he's brought to the turnaround of the club.
That's fair enough, to be fair. But also, you've had the added stress over the years of watching Liverpool in various different time zones. I'm sure that's been stressful, staying up until ungodly hours to watch a 1-0 loss against Burnley, for example.
Yeah, so like I'm obsessed with numbers. I think maybe that's how I did my every country thing. You know, like this whole autism is a gradient thing. For sure, I'm on that spectrum somewhere. I'm obsessed with countries and capitals and flags, and I read stats all day long for football. I spend two hours a day probably on football forums. I'm really obsessed with it. So for sure, there's something in me that loves that. So I never miss games. Like I'd be in the Congo or Uzbekistan or whatever, like messaging people on social media, can I use their Wi-Fi so I can get the game? So I probably only missed in the last, it took me, 12 years to visit every country in the world. I probably only missed a handful of games, no matter what the time zone or where I am or whatever.
That's class. I think that speaks volumes to a fan base. And there's certain football fans that still believe that if you don't go to games live regularly, then you're not a real fan. And that really pisses me off, to be honest.
In the global game, it's tough. Like, obviously, I'm Irish. You can hear from my accent. But, you know, we claim Liverpool as the capital of Ireland. We've got more Irish people there than anywhere. That's just a bit elitist, isn't it? It's even now, with football being so expensive, you could even be in the city. And if you're like, I come from a working class, single parent background, like even if I was from Liverpool, I wouldn't have been going to the games as a kid anyway. I wouldn't have been able to afford it. So then what? Are they also not fans?
Yeah, good point. I'm an Arsenal fan. We've got the highest season ticket prices in the league. You'd need
in the
a
world?
Mortgage to pay.
I think it's in the world, mate.
Probably in the world. Actually. I'm curious to hear if football has helped you sort of connect with people around the world on your travels, because from my experience in Thailand, especially, I used to go watch Thai pork quite often. And it was an amazing mix of like foreigners and Thai people, all just having a few beers, enjoying the atmosphere. It was just incredible. It's like a catalyst for getting to know someone, you know?
Yeah, 100%. That's a massive thing. Sometimes I've got a couple of American friends I travel with sometimes. And when we're in obscure countries, they're really left out, because that's exactly what football is. It's a massive building block. And then because I support a mainstream team like Liverpool, it's instant camaraderie. I mean, I remember I was going to the North Pole 2 years ago, and you leave to get to the North Pole from this island, the most northern inhabited island in the world. It's called Svalbard, the middle of nowhere in the Arctic Circle, belongs to Norway. And I'd just gone to the North Pole or just come back from the North Pole, and Liverpool were playing during the Champions League winning year, or maybe it was season four, and I couldn't find anywhere with decent internet or whatever happened. And I tweeted out, and I ended up at the Liverpool Supporters Club watching the game down the pub in this bloody island called Svalbard no one's even heard of, and there's like 12 Liverpool fans watching the game in there. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's class. It seems to be only a few clubs have quite the same sort of I don't know what the word is, like quite as many fan clubs around the world. Like Celtic always have them. Liverpool always seem to have them. I went to a Liverpool bar in I think it was in Seoul, and it was just all Liverpool themed. It was class, but obviously Seoul's quite westernized anyway. I'm curious to hear why you chose Thailand as your adopted home, because it's obviously so well connected to the outside world, with Bangkok Airport is so well connected, but I'm sure that's not the only reason.
So I went to university. I'm Irish. I went to university in England, graduated from uni at 22, and wanted to go traveling, but I didn't have any money to do this whole gap year thing. And my mum couldn't pay for my gap year, and nor should she. So I had to work basically if I wanted to travel. So I wanted to do my year out, like lots of people do when they're young, but I couldn't afford to travel. So I had to work if I wanted to have an adventure. So I ended up learning about the whole concept of teaching English as a foreign language. Anyone listening to this probably dreads their kid having me as an English teacher speaking like this. But anyway, that's what I did. So I ended up teaching English in Thailand for a year in 2007, 2008. And then I started my blog and my journey to every country in the world, and I started making money. So once I started making money online, even just $500 a month or something I was making, and then that was roughly what I was making when I was teaching English. I was making about 700 or 800 teaching English. So then I moved back to Thailand because I knew I could get by on a low amount of money per month. So I taught there originally, and then when I started making money online, that's where I moved back to, basically.
Yeah, fair enough. I know you also, on your travels, you've got like the working visa for Australia, was it? Like, you were really just ticking all the backpacker boxes.
Yeah, I'm a cliche.
Yeah, there is something though about the lifestyle you can live in Thailand for the same money. Like I remember when I was there paying $250 or something like that for my apartment, right, and with a gym, a pool, like a nice flat as well. I mean, that wouldn't get me anywhere in England.
Yeah. I bought an investment property here last year in Slough, which is not the loveliest pocket of England. And I'm renting out and it's over $1,000 a month. And I'm thinking, God, people are paying $1,000 a month to live in my crap apartment in Slough, and then you think like what $1,000 a month would get you in Thailand.
Yeah, completely different. At what point on your travels did you decide to we'll come on to the blogging, but also when you decided to decided that you wanted to visit every country in the world? Was it a decision that you made, or did you just manage to have a large portion ticked off and then before you knew it, the ball was rolling?
Kind of a bit of both. So I hadn't traveled much growing up. I'd only been to 2 or 3 countries by the time I was 18. We didn't go on many holidays and stuff. I think we went overseas maybe 2 or 3 times until I was 18 and the money. So when I moved to Thailand after uni, then I taught for a year and then I traveled all around Asia. So let's say maybe 20 countries or so. And then I went to Australia, like you mentioned, on a working holiday visa, like half of Ireland do, and lived there for a year. And then I quit my job because I was depressed working in an office. And I spent a year traveling from Cape Town to Cairo through Africa, from the bottom of Africa all the way to the top, all via public transport, buses and taxis and all. It was wild. And anyway, that's when I started making my kind of $500-$600 a month from a blog. And with that, I moved back to Thailand, like I mentioned. And then I counted up my countries and I was on 49 countries then from the last, like, that took me maybe all that Asia stuff and Australia and Africa, maybe 3-4 years or whatever it was. And I knew there was roughly 200 countries in the world. And I thought I kind of like accidentally visited a quarter of the world. So at that point, I set a target to visit 100 countries by the time I was 30 and every country in the world by 35. That was my goal. And once I hit 49, I was like, oh, this could be possible.
Yeah, incredible. We'll come onto some of those countries later on. But with the blogging, when you started that blog up, how long did it take you before you were earning an income from it? And I'm sure it wasn't quite as easy as it might sound.
It was quite easy, and it still is quite easy. People just quit too early, you know. People they don't have any resilience when things get tough. But it's not very good. I'm awful with technology, and I'm not a very good writer, and I'm a terrible photographer, and I've managed to make it work. So really, if anyone sticks with it and follows the basics, you can make it work. You can't necessarily make millions of dollars, but you can absolutely make a living from it. And so I started my blog in 2010, so 10 years ago, when I was actually still in Australia on my work and holiday visa. I was working in an office, depressed, like I said. So I just used that time in the office to not work and start my blog. But I don't even know how to start a blog or anything. I hired a Filipino guy to do it for me for $100. He did that. Let's say I started that 11 years ago, January 2010. And then I flew to South Africa. I was in Africa in the South Africa World Cup in 2008. So I went there. And then within about 6 to 9 months, I was making about $500 a month. And I'm not a flash guy, so I can get by with $500 a month. So then I was kind of just about afloat at that point. And then I was kind of free to both travel and to try to grow it into something a bit bigger.
I presume that was just from placing ads, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's kind of an SEO thing, but you place sponsored content on your site that helps other companies help their Google rankings. But essentially, it's an ad. Yeah, you're placing ads.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Do you think that your timing was key in terms of your success with that? Because I know so many people want to fund their travels in similar ways, and there's an abundance of options everywhere now.
Yeah, I mean, the timing helped, but for example, I'm stuck here now, right, in England. I'm rarely in England, and I'm in an Airbnb here for a month while I'm trying to get to Lanzarote for this next challenge. And I've always got people asking me on Instagram or through my blog, my email, can I show them how to do it? Because I'm always telling people that it's not very complicated, which it's not. And I never have time to help people because I'm always traveling, doing stuff. And now I'm stuck here with lockdown, blah, blah, blah. I'm helping 3 people. And at the same time, 3 people in a couple of days said, listen, can you help me? And I'm doing like coaching calls with them, 6 sets of 30 minutes. One's a 50-year-old lady who doesn't know anything. One's a Scottish couple who want to get into travel blogging. And they're about my age, kind of 30, 35. And one's an American guy living in Colombia who's a bit more clued up on tech and wants to know how to do the money side of it. And I'm sure, 100% sure, if they all follow what I've told them, that within a year, they'll all be making like at least $1,000 a month. And then that's enough to fund your travels if you're cheap, or it's a great side hustle to put money away for a deposit for a house or invest in crypto, whatever you want to do with it. So yeah, for sure, there's still like, yeah, the timing helped, but there's always space for someone who knows what they're doing.
That's interesting. I might have to check that out then. I'm curious, do you still get the same thrill when you're traveling? Because now you've been to so many countries, does it wear off, or is that novelty still there?
You know, I like to say yes, but I think if anyone's followed me from back in the day when I first started and to now when I finished every country, and I'm like a drug addict, just going to more and more extreme things. So yeah, I still absolutely love hopping border to border, but now my financial situation's a bit better, and I get a lot of opportunities with my blog to do stuff. It's not like unheard of for me to get an email tonight from like Qatar to go and speak at a conference next week, not during COVID, obviously. You know what I mean? So, whereas 10 years ago, the thought of that sounds so rock and roll, I would have loved it, but now it just becomes part of your life. So it doesn't feel as exciting. And that's how I end up doing all these stupid things like North Pole and Sahara ultramarathons and all that. You got to find your buzz elsewhere.
Yeah, just trying to outdo yourself every time. Yeah. Now, what was it about traveling that really appealed to you? Was it the freedom, the places, or the people?
Yeah. 100% the freedom. It was the freedom initially, and still is. I don't ever want to be instructed when I can take holidays, or having to get a bloody letter to say you've been at the dentist. I mean, I'm 37 years old, get a grip, you know, I don't need people to tell me what to do. So it was the freedom. And then my blog started getting popular because I was this guy without much money, single parent, blah, 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 in a tough situation. And then I realized that every time you look at people doing cool stuff online, it's either some like smoking hot girl or some rich, older, white, posh guy. You know, like it's always posh people climbing Mount Everest. It's always posh people like sailing across the world. And I think it's cool then that my story, like single parent guy from Ireland, can achieve big things. And it was the freedom for me selfishly that originally started it. And then now I think it's cool that I can show people that you can come from any walk of life or any financial background and still make cool things happen and do stuff that you always thought was just for another old white posh guy that you'd see on BBC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I'm sure that will ease some people who aren't too sure if they sort of have the funds to travel or if they're considering it. As it is going to be impossible to discuss every travel anecdote that you have, we'd need a 6-hour-long episode, I think. I'm going to go through some questions to find out how you rank some of the places that you've been to, if you're game for that.
Let's do it.
Sound. Okay, not an easy one. Off the bat, favourite country?
I know it's going to be quick. So, I mean, favorite country to live in is Thailand. Favorite country to visit. It's a bit controversial now after the last 10 months that we've had, but probably China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, where in China?
So, I mean, you go to countries like Iran or Sri Lanka and the people are really friendly, like crazy friendly. You can hardly pay for your own cup of tea. China is not like that, let's say, diplomatically. Mm. But what it does have is a huge mass. So you've got like Paradise Islands in the east, like around Hainan. You've got Tibet. I mean, strictly speaking, although they should be recognized as independent countries, they're not. You've got Hong Kong in there. Then you've got the big powerhouses like Beijing and Shanghai. And then you've got rural China, inland China, like Shangri-La. And there's a city in the northwest called Urumqi, where you have kind of Eurasian looking, almost Caucasian Chinese people. Where their Chinese Muslim population lives, and they're almost white but speaking full Chinese accents, eating noodles, and it's like a really interesting cultural mix. So just it offers so much. It offers everything that you could want as a traveler.
Yeah. One thing that's not quite the same, but Japan is one place that I went to that I'd love to go back. And part of that reason is because they don't give a toss what we are doing here. They have their own culture. They have their own little trips away internally. And it's just, I'd love to see that, because you get sick of going to places sometimes and everyone, like, they want the foreigners to be there so much because they need the tourism, whereas Japan's not asked.
Yeah, cool country. I was there last year, actually. I do a lot of charity stuff these days, and my mum's got Parkinson's, and she's up for her 70th birthday. I took a group of oldies to Mount Fuji, and we all climbed Mount Fuji together for cure Parkinson's. It was cool.
Oh, class. Incredible. Well, we'll definitely come on to some of that charity work that you have been doing. Onto these questions, though. One country that you wouldn't return to, and why?
There's a country in West Africa called Guinea. Not Papua New Guinea and not Guinea-Bissau. It's Guinea. Right. It's where Tiki Camera comes from. I don't know if you remember.
And
it is kind of lawless and a bit rough and ready. It took me like 18 hours in the back of a motorbike through the jungle to get into the country. And when I was there, I stayed in this crap Chinese hotel that some Chinese guy opened in the port. It was the only place that was open to foreigners, like, because there's no tourist infrastructure. I was there for 3 nights, paid $100 a night. It was pretty expensive for West Africa. It was an absolute shithole, cockroaches all over my room. And then one, I tried to leave on the third morning. I was like, I got to get out of this place because Senegal is to the north of it. And that's a cool country. And I wanted to get into Senegal. And I went downstairs to leave the hotel and I could just hear gunshots outside. And I was like, oh, I've got a bus booked. What? I said to the reception girl, got a bus booked. What's going on? She's like, oh, they've blown up the prison wall. All the prisoners have escaped. The police are chasing them. And I'm stuck in my hotel. And we were on lockdown then. It was like 3 years ago or whatever. And there's just people running. The police are just running around shooting, like trying to shoot criminals on the streets of Guinea. Conakry is the name of the capital, I think. And it was a wild. It was horrible anyway. And then that happened. I'm like, get me out of this place.
Well, yeah, I won't be booking a flight there anytime soon. What about the most underrated place that you've been?
Ah, that's a good question. God, it's just because I've been everywhere. So many answers. A cool country, but I think it's starting to get a bit of a buzz. Actually, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm deep in the travel community. But it's Ethiopia. Have you been hearing much stuff about people?
I haven't,
going there?
To be honest. But
okay, yeah. that's cool. And it's got loads of cool stuff. There's this place in northeast Ethiopia. It's the oldest Islamic city in Africa, and there's this old generation of guys. One guy lost his wife 150 years ago and he was really lonely. He started feeding these wild hyenas outside the city, and the hyenas have continued to die and breed and die and breed, and they're kind of like friends with this family. And his son then fed them, and his son fed them, and now there's a guy there about 40 who still feeds these wild hyenas, and you can go and see the wild hyenas getting fed. And when I went there, he like sticks a big stick in his mouth and sticks a big bit of red meat on it, and a hyena comes and bites the meat off the stick right face to face, and then he sticks the stick in my mouth and he's like, you do it. And I've got this massive hyena biting this piece of red meat like literally 2 centimeters from your nose.
Wow. Yeah, I don't see that much in England. What about the most overrated place that you've been?
Ooh, wow. Overrated. You know, I'm quite a positive guy, to be honest, mate. And I feel like there's beauty to be found everywhere, whether it's the people that you meet or the things that you see.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously, knowing Thailand, you know Thailand quite well yourself. Like, I would say Phuket is quite an overrated place.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy Phuket at all, to be honest.
I don't like it. Anywhere that's been overdeveloped to chase tourist dollars, Cancun as well, another shithole. Have you ever been there?
I haven't been Cancun, no, but I imagine it to be almost similar to Phuket, but with slightly younger people.
Yeah, they're not my. But then there's a guy, people want to go there, good luck to them. It's just not for me.
Yeah, no, fair enough. This one might be quite difficult. What is the weirdest thing that you've ever seen?
Oh, wow. I don't know, but I'll tell you the weirdest thing I've ever eaten is I'm a vegetarian, I have been for years, but when I wasn't, I went to North Korea and I got served up a bowl of dog soup when I was in this temple in North Korea, which is quite an odd experience. And one time I was in a night market in China. I was handed this like street food again before it was a veggie, and it was like a circular piece of meat on it. And I don't know if you know that, but pigs' penises are also like a little bit like their tails are called circular.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm not surprised you're vegetarian after some of those things that you've eaten. Do you still have a comfort zone?
Yeah, of course. But I'm really wary of it because I know that like the whole cliche is so valid that like the magic happens outside your comfort zone. So I really try to challenge that literally on a daily basis. But a comfort zone I have when I'm back in Bangkok with my missus and my mates, and I've got my gym, and I know what time Liverpool are kicking off, and I can drink on some days and I eat healthy on these days, and I do have a routine there. Although I might just be saying that because I got locked down there over COVID. So I had to do that. I'd never done that previously, but that was quite a comfortable time for me. But then, like, I'm a big believer in this, mate, that the level of achievement, whatever you dub your achievement to be, whether it's financial, traveling to every country in the world, having a good body, speaking lots of languages, whatever it is, the level of discomfort that you're willing to accept is directly correlated to the amount of success you're going to have in life. And I'm very conscious of that. So I try not to get too comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, no, fair enough. What about the most interesting person that you've ever met?
Wow. I know a guy who should have been interesting, but actually was boring. I met her. There's a guy called Robert Scott. Is his first name Robert? Anyway, he was the first British guy to try to go to the North Pole. I met his grandson when I was going to Antarctica one time, which is really cool. But actually, he was just a boring guy who was living off his granddad's story.
Yeah, that's disappointing. What about
I met a really cool Indian guy once. He comes from like poverty in India, and now he's a multimillionaire. He's about 33, 34. Super humble, quiet guy. I traveled with him in Argentina. And he made his money. Now he owns a little startup tech company. He's got offices in Singapore and Dubai, which makes good money. But he made, when he was like 28, he met this Russian guy, because he's so lovely, everyone loves him when you meet him. And he met some Russian guy who turned out to be a billionaire. And he brokered the sale of a submarine from some rich Indian guy to this Russian guy. And that's how he made his money. So he made like 500 grand off this submarine sale. And he was just a normal dude. Like, he's not in that world. And then he had this opportunity to do this.
That's mad. Yeah, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Yeah, there we go. Have you ever really struggled emotionally on your travels?
Yes, actually, really badly. When I finished my journey to every country, which was 2017, and I started in 07, so basically it was 10 or 11 years. And my sister actually had warned me about it. She's quite a spiritual, kind of hippie type girl, my sister is. And she had told me in advance, because she knows I'm a very like type A personality, set a goal, focus on it, blinkers, don't deviate, which is what I'm doing now for all my other new challenges. But this had been such a long one, 10 years. She told me to be ready for the low that I would feel after achieving it. And then I went to my last country, which was Norway. I had a big celebrations, friends and family all came to my final country. And then like for about 9 months, I didn't really realize it until the following year. I got fat. I was drinking loads, like 5-6 nights a week. My business went to shit. I wasn't doing any of my accounts. Whatever came in. I wasn't doing any outreach. I wasn't recording anything. Didn't produce any blog posts for months on end. And then I look back at it retrospectively and I'm like, whoa, I'm hesitant to use the word, but I was probably depressed, you know, the worst shape I've been in my life. Most I've drunk in my life, less money I've made because I wasn't motivated to do anything. That really affected me. And then that actually carried on through 2018 a little bit too. And it was only 2019 I started to look at it and be like, oh wow, I need to sort myself out here.
Yeah, I imagine after such a big achievement, the come down of that must have been brutal.
But then the thing is, big achievements only sound like they're big from the outside. When you're the one who does it, it doesn't feel like that, because you know that you're just a normal dude. So you know that if you did it, anyone can do it. So what's the point in having a big fanfare about it? So it was almost a bit of an anti-climax too, because I just felt like, yeah, it's cool, it took me a long time, but the fact that I could do it meant anyone could do it. So it's not that amazing. And then what do I do now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that like fitness has been at the heart of quite a lot of the challenges you've done as well. Like you mentioned there that you got a bit unfit after that happened. Like you've done the marathons across the Sahara, the charity marathon you've got coming up this year at the Serengeti National Park. And coming up next, you're doing this row across the Atlantic, which, I mean, I hate open water. So this, I'm scared just talking about it. But yeah, what can you tell us about this upcoming challenge?
Well, I'm pretty scared too, because I can't really swim.
Right.
I've been taking lessons in Bangkok just before I left here, actually. And I've never rowed before. I've never been in the ocean in a rowboat. What is there to say? So when I met a guy, when I was doing my 6 marathons in the Sahara, I met a guy who was in my tent every night, who was a former Marine or something. And he had rowed across the Atlantic like 10 years ago. And I was like, that's far cooler than I've ever done. I want to do that. How do you get into that? He's a lovely guy, but he's a really posh guy, like I said earlier. It's just always posh people who get the opportunities to do these things, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, rowing and sailing, it's always like people, rich parents, blah, blah, blah. And he just told me to join part of this rowing group that was called Ocean Rowing Society or something on Facebook. And I joined it and I just stalked them from a distance, like seeing all this cool stuff they're doing over the next few years. And then in October or November, just a couple of months ago, there was just a post come up saying last minute vacancy, there's a spot going in a boat that's rowing across the Atlantic. Does anyone want to apply for it? And I applied for it, went through the interview process, blah, 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 paid my money, it's expensive as well, and then got on it. And Yeah, so it leaves from Lanzarote. I'm supposed to be starting in 4 days, but because of COVID, I can't get to Lanzarote, so it's delayed. But it leaves from Lanzarote off the coast of Morocco, and then it takes 2 months, about 50 days or so, and you land in Antigua in the Caribbean. 5,000 kilometers, 3,000 miles or so.
Is that going to be your most difficult challenge yet, do you think?
It's the scariest because, like, the actual discomfort, fitness-wise, I might be the fittest. There's four, a team of four, and I might be the fittest, or if I'm not the fittest, it'll be the guy. I don't know if you remember a show called Dirty Sanchez growing up, but I'm doing it with one of the guys from Dirty Sanchez.
He's quite fit as well.
But it's about it's not the fitness that I'm worried about, mate. It's the discomfort. It's 2 hours rowing, 2 hours resting, 24 hours a day for 7 or 8 weeks. So you don't ever really properly sleep.
Yeah, and you're raising money for two charities? You're doing that?
Yeah, it's actually kind of, there's one main charity that we're representing, which is called Human, which is actually a beautiful movement that they're trying to start. It's like Human, but M-E-N. And it's basically an actor in London who's created a safe space. I'm not big into all this ultra woke stuff, but when it comes to mental health, I think it's actually a really important conversation to have, especially during COVID and especially with males, with the statistics that are coming out. So anyway, this guy created this beautiful idea where men could go and congregate and see, not necessarily talk about their problems if they don't want to. You can sit there and talk about football if you want, but other people will talk about their problems and you can realize that you're not alone and feeling like overwhelmed by whatever, whether it's COVID stuff or whatever. And then obviously COVID shut it down quite early because it couldn't meet in groups. So now he does this on, it's going to go back to being in person. They've got little pockets in most cities in the UK and it's going to grow quite quickly by the looks of things. But then in the meantime, because of COVID, they've been doing it online. So they do it online. They're doing it online, like Zoom call with maybe like 20, 30 people. I think it's 6:30 or 7:30 every Monday. And it's just amazing, mate. Like everyone's, I've never been a part of anything like that anyway. So it's basically a space for men's mental health and it's beautiful. So we're trying to raise $200,000 for them with the rope. And I've become an ambassador for them now recently. And it's just such a cool thing that they're doing. And I think it's going to be really helpful.
Awesome. That sounds good. Where can people donate to that?
They can donate to the whole project. Just hop on my Instagram or blog. You'll be able to find it. I talk about the row a lot at the moment. And if you just want to go directly to Human, it's H-U-M-E-N. Just Google that and you'll be able to sign up for the weekly meetups or whatever you want to call it. And they're facilitated by a coordinator. It's honestly a really professional setup and it's really cool. It feels a bit weird when you first log on and you're like, God, what am I doing here? And then after 20 minutes and the second one you go, you're like, this is actually, there's a real space for this in society. It's cool. Mm.
Awesome. That sounds good. Hopefully go check that out, people, if that interests you, and donate as well to the challenge that they're doing. Has fitness always been a big part of your life, or does it just give you a buzz to push yourself now in almost obscure places that make you push yourself even further?
Yeah, it's always been a big part of my life. Like, as a sporty guy playing football and stuff, and I used to play hockey at uni as well, and I used to go running. But I never really maximized all the free time I had at uni. I feel like I should have done more stuff then. So I'd never run like a 10K or a half marathon or a marathon. I didn't know any times. I went to the gym like once or twice a week, but I wasn't into like bodybuilding supplements and nutrition. I didn't understand any of that until a bit later in life. But I wish I'd done it earlier, to be honest, when I had more free time. I understand, to be honest, the every country in the world thing pretty much consumed my life for 10 years. It really did. So it was hard to stay in shape. I tried to. I would go for runs and stuff wherever I am around the world, but I wasn't in peak condition by my standards, I wouldn't have thought. So in a way, when I finished my every country thing, it then allowed me to, I've always been interested in fitness. And so it's allowed me to have the free time to be able to focus on doing like cool fitness challenges and stuff. And I'm really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to touch on your mum, because like you said, I want to find out if you've introduced her to this new passion for traveling, or maybe if she's somehow instilled it in you from the offset when you were young.
Well, it's hard to say because Irish people have got traveling in their blood, right? So who knows, genetic memory and all that. But my mum had a tough situation with my father, who was a bad guy and out of prison and all this stuff. So she kind of kept her under the cosh for we ended up leaving, moving countries and all that. So she had a tough time when we were unemployed and blah, blah, blah. So we just didn't travel for 10, 20, 30 years. And my mom had maybe visited a handful of countries like anyone else would on holiday or whatever. And then, because I've always had a really good relationship with my mom, when I first moved to Thailand in 07 to teach English, I would speak to my mom most days anyway. So then, although she would come once a year to visit me to Thailand, right? And then next year, we went to India for a holiday together. I would be traveling anyway, and she would come over to one of the countries I happened to be in once a year. And then she got diagnosed with Parkinson's and realized that time is finite, which it is for all of us, but these things make it more tangible, I guess, and act as a catalyst. Mm-hmm. So then it became two and three times, and obviously my financial situation changed with the blog, so I could help her with the costs of all that stuff. And now we do loads of trips together, which is cool.
Yeah, that's glass. I'm glad to see that she's obviously enjoying these as well, this new lease of life almost.
She just made me a coffee here. You know, I'm 37, like, and now I've come back and got stuck in COVID in Airbnb, and she's like 17 again with laundry and dinner for the last while.
You can never say no to it though. Never say no.
Yeah, that's
it. Also, you started a non-profit to support local communities in countries that need support, like Syria and Yemen, for example. I'm curious to hear why you sort of felt that need to sort of give back to the universe, because I'm sure it's been a lot of hard work, but a lot of fulfilling work as well.
Well, it's cool, mate, because there's a few things. Like, so obviously I didn't come from money and now I am financially free, right? So, and travel gave me everything. So for a start, morally, I'm compelled to give something back. That's first and foremost. Secondly, I feel like there's lots of cool people in the world who want to do two cool things. Number one, go to places that everyone doesn't go to. So not everyone wants to go on holiday to Thailand. Live in Thailand, sure, but it's not an adventure. I know maybe people think it is, and I'm sorry to burst the bubble. It's not, because there's a million people doing the same thing as you, right? It's all relative, I know, but still. So there's loads of people who want to go to cool countries. Like, they want to go and see what Syria is like. They don't want to hear just all about the negative media spin in Iraq and in wherever. So they want to go there themselves. And those kind of adventurous people are my kind of people. So that's one. And number two is people also understand, I feel, how privileged they are in the modern world, understand that we're very blessed to have free healthcare, free education, a strong passport, disposable income to a certain extent, the capacity to make money and the capacity to grow in a career. And we've got anyone who's born in the West, regardless of the chips on their shoulder, they can pretend about how many obstacles they have. You've got no obstacle compared to the rest of the world. If you're failing, it's because of yourself. You've got every opportunity to succeed. And lots of people have that. And now they want to give back as part of their trips, because they don't want to spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a holiday, drink pina coladas for 2 weeks, which is also cool, but then leave no positive impact. So I kind of tried to marry those two ideas, that people want to come to cool places and see places that would break the narrative that you normally hear about them, and also use our money on that trip to give back to the community. So where normal companies would take the profit margin as profit, of course, we use that margin to like build malaria clinics or sports grounds or kindergartens and all that sort of stuff. So it's been cool. And we meet loads of cool people, both in the communities that we do it in, and the kind of mentality of the people who come on the trips with us, like, are my kind of people. So it's fun.
That sounds class. What project are you most proud of so far that you've set up?
Well, we actually did, I work a lot with the Burmese refugees in the north of Thailand. So we did a really cool malaria clinic for them last year with a private company. But the one I'm probably most proud of is we identified a community in Arusha in Tanzania, part of the Maasai tribe, just outside Arusha, which we'll go to again with the Serengeti Marathon. And my co-founder of our nonprofit and I went there first about 4 years ago, and we built, it's like a kind of a shack of a school, and don't get any government funding, and they're sitting on dirt floors, and it's, unfortunately, the stereotype that you have about an African school kind of looked like that, right?
Right.
So we built them three new classrooms as part of the school. The rest of the school was still pretty run down, but they had these three like tiled proper walls, blah, blah, blah. It was quite nice, almost like Western standard. It was really nice. And then we offered that trip to my followers, and because basically the way we fund it is we bring 16 people who follow me to the country, and that's the money that funds the school. And then we go on a cool trip after. So we build the three classrooms, and then we go on safari and go on party in Zanzibar after to celebrate. It's cool. Or like whatever, sometimes like we build a community center in Philippines, and then we go and party in Palawan after. It's really fun.
That sounds good.
So then with Tanzania, what happened was the trip sold out in like a day because everyone was like, God, it sounds amazing. And we got to do this cool thing. We had to go on safari, we had to go to Zanzibar. So now we've been back 5 or 6 times. So that school now has like got like 10 classrooms, running water, toilets, showers, staff room, and it's almost completely transformed. It's really cool.
That's class. It's great to hear as well that you want to do those sort of things proactively, because you know, there's so many greedy people in the world. So yeah, it's nice to see that. We've flown through all the questions that I had planned, but I just have a few more for us to round off on. I want to see what advice you would give someone wanting to travel more and potentially escape their typical working week lifestyle that they live.
You mean to change their entire life and quit their job, or you mean to just go on holiday though?
Or to begin planning for that eventual escape.
The two most important things I would say is, number one, you have to sit in a dark room, legit do this. I'm not talking about some Instagram quote sharing rubbish. I mean, you have to literally do this. Sit down, turn off all your Wi-Fi, don't tell your family or friends, whoever you live with, not to come in, and spend an hour or two with a pen or paper, or days if it takes it, and be honest with yourself about what you want from your life. And if you want to be rich, but you don't want to say it because you feel selfish or whatever, you have to be honest about it. If you want to work in the NGO charity sector, then do that. If you're already 40 but want to be a football coach and you think it's stupid, you then write down football coach. You have to be honest with yourself, and it's scary, and you have to be humble. So that's the first thing you have to do, be truly honest with yourself. And then second, once you've done that, then you need to be willing to cut your losses. You need to accept that if what you've written down is not where you are in life, which invariably it won't be, then you have to accept that you've made lots of mistakes and wasted lots of time until this point today. And you have to accept that that time is gone and dead time, but better to change it today than drag on another 5 years and you've wasted another 5 years. So you have to cut your, so number one, you have to be honest with yourself what you want. Number two, you have to be willing to cut your losses from all the bad mistakes and wrong paths you've taken. And even if that means that you've spent years becoming a lawyer but you hate it, then that means cutting that, and that's difficult. So the thing is about people who live their dream like, or follow their passion and are happy with their life, they've done that, but it's so scary. And those are the two simple things that you have to do, but they're simple in concept, but they're difficult in practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds very raw. It sounds very vulnerable. But if you don't open yourself up like that, then you're going to stay in this current situation you're in, I guess. And last question, actually, is there anything still on your bucket list? Anything that you still want to complete, or are you really scraping the barrel, just trying to find anything now?
There's two things I want to do, actually. It's something I've just been working on quietly in the last month, I'll tell you in a second. But first thing I want to do is I want to be the first person in history to visit every country, North Pole, South Pole, and climb the 7 summits, the highest mountain in every continent. So I'm working towards that at the moment. And then there's some plan I'm doing, I shouldn't say in case someone steals my idea and does it before me, but there's me, and I follow this guy on Instagram called Auldstock, Auld_stock. It's like, it means old in Irish. He used to play for Leinster, some big beast rugby guy, right? And he does loads of cool challenges like I do. So now we're friends. And him and I are thinking about maybe being the first people ever to row and cycle, basically human powered around the whole world. No one's ever done it in one, like to go around the whole world without using any engine, all man powered. So I'm thinking about putting that together. It takes quite a lot of time, maybe get a documentary. So that would be row across the Atlantic, cycle probably from maybe either South America or if we row to Miami, cycle across the USA, then row across the Pacific, and then cycle all across China, Trans-Siberian, all across Europe, back to the UK.
That sounds class. I think the BBC will be missing a trick if they don't get that on a documentary. But yeah, Johnny, we've gone through everything that I wanted to touch on. Thank you so much for joining me on the Football and Feelings podcast. I've learned a lot from you, and I'm sure our listeners would have as well. I hope you've enjoyed yourself as well.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Good luck with it.
Pleasure. Thank you very much. And to the listener, thank you for joining me on the Football and Feelings podcast. Like I said at the beginning, give it a 5-star rating if you've enjoyed it. If you haven't enjoyed it, then don't leave a 1-star rating. Don't be that person. But thank you very much. Take care of yourself. See you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.